Yeah, we have this word now from the BBC of a man in living. It's, his name is Atiyah. He's a 33-year-old electrical engineer living in Mosul. He says, normal people like me, we aren't scared. He said that he was only leaving town with his wife and five children for fear of Malaki's response, not the ISIS rule. The ones who are scared are the ones that did something bad in the past, like those in the army and the police. It's probably true that when you empower a religious zealot with military weapons and as well as in the police, they become, well, despicable, and they're able to impose their will on innocence. Shiite militias were also gearing up for a fight. Quote, we announce our readiness to defend Iraq and its holy shrines, said the Iranian-backed Asad al-Haq in a statement, pledging revenge for the blood of the martyrs killed by ISIS. Yeah, it's nothing really that diminishes and puts down a civil war like the calls for revenge for the blood of the martyrs. The statement came as ISIS issued its own pledge to avenge past grievances, vowing to march to Baghdad to settle scores, and also the holy Shiite cities of Najaf and Karbala further south. In an audio address posted on the internet, ISIS spokesperson Abu Muhammad Anani taunted Malaki. What have you done to your people, O foolish one? He said, you lost a historic opportunity for your people to control Iraq, and the Shiites will always curse you for as long as you live. We have a clip, I think this is from CNN, of what has transpired. And in this clip, what you're going to hear is a lot of shouting of Allahu Akbar, which tells you that these are fundamentalist Muslims. They are fighting and killing, torturing, dismembering people, committing acts of mass murder in the name of Allah. It's the exact same line that was shouted as Muslims flew planes into our buildings on 9/11. Allahu Akbar. What you're also going to hear is that the ISIS contingent, these fundamentalist Muslims, are now wielding American military equipment. Everything that America fought to achieve in Iraq has been torn asunder. Not that America achieved anything worthwhile, but at this point, it is worse than Vietnam, where the Americans who surrendered their lives fighting on orders of their government saw everything that they had fought for turn against them. That is the condition that we find in Iraq today. So, Aaron, would you please play the tape?
We are just learning from both the State Department and other administration officials, including the Pentagon, that somewhat less than 100 U.S. troops, somewhere between 50 and 100 U.S. troops, have arrived at the U.S. Embassy in Baghdad. It is a mix of Marines and Army soldiers. They are going to go and stay put there. They are going to be there to reinforce protection at the embassy. At this point, they are not going to be involved in any evacuation of American employees or American civilians from Baghdad or from Iraq. They are simply going to the embassy to reinforce security there. But, of course, this comes, as we learned just a short time ago, that the State Department has indeed ordered a partial evacuation of some Americans working at the embassy. Some will be moved out to Jordan, and some will go to other, at least start by going to other places in Iraq where there is not yet any fighting. They will head south. Mainly. But, you know, how long will this sort of interim period for the Americans left, I think the question that everyone is looking at is, can the Americans be kept secure? And if they need to get out, will there be a way for them to get out without being involved in the fighting?
Yeah, it was actually, that's a follow-up story to the story that I thought we were going to play as one of the challenges with clips from CNN. They rotate through, and so that was actually a follow-up clip. But the one that preceded it has screaming Muslims with Allahu Akbar. It has the leaders of ISIS standing up in front of large crowds in places like Mosul, with the crowds cheering on his behalf, talking about how he has driven the infidels out, and that control is now back in the hands of fundamentalist Muslims. He's announcing the establishment of an Islamic State in those areas, and they are shown firing 50-caliber machine guns from American Humvees as they press forward in their quest to conquer most of the country. There's also a presentation that shows how much of Iraq and Syria has been conquered. The fact is that now almost all of north and western Syria is governed by, is controlled by ISIS. And almost all of western Iraq and northern Iraq, as well as central Iraq, is also under the control of the Islamic State of Iraq and Syria. Now, the entity that now controls most of Iraq and most of Syria didn't even exist at the time of the American invasion. While all of the media wants to say that this is an Al-Qaeda-inspired organization, they have no connections to Al-Qaeda, never had any. In fact, the CNN audios actually makes the point that this is a terrorist organization that is so ruthless, Al-Qaeda doesn't even want any association with it. They never had any association with it. This is an organization that didn't even exist until the American invasion. And the ones America invaded, since America was deposing a Sunni government and a dominantly Shia country, the Sunnis formed a militancy. And their militancy was not just to oppose the invading Americans, but also to oppose the Mahdi Mujahideen, that was the largest armed faction in Iraq after the U.S. invasion, because the Iraqi military quickly disbanded. And to think that it was a militancy that was all but disbanded until Petraeus came up with the idea, stupid at the time, to create what's called the Awakening Programs, whereby Americans would be providing weapons and money to Sunni militants. And Petraeus said, whoa, they're going to use those weapons to fight Al-Qaeda. Wait a minute. No, they're not. Al-Qaeda was a Sunni Islamic organization. They used those weapons initially to fight against the Shia militants. But what happened is that the Shia militants were told by al-Sistani to not fight. There was no incentive for them to fight because America had given the Shias total control over Iraq. So they were told, don't fight. Then all the weapons that were given to the Sunnis, they recognized that against the Shia militias and against the government troops, they were way too overpowered, outgunned, for them to prevail. And so while they launched constant barrage of suicide bombings, they didn't engage in all-out war. That was until America, through Qatar, through Saudi Arabia, through Turkey and Kuwait started sending billions of dollars worth of very sophisticated weapons to the Sunni Mujahideen that were fighting in Syria. So now that they were armed to the teeth, now that they had 50 caliber machine guns, now they had anti-tank weapons, now that they had surface-to-air missiles, now that they were well-armed, the Sunni Mujahideen in Syria crossed back over into Iraq and took their own government to war. And that's what's happened. And so now you've got them not only armed with all of the weapons America funneled to them in Syria, coming back in and just devastating the Iraqi military, but now that they have captured so many towns, and I mean it's Qabala and Fallujah and Mosul and Tikrit, it goes on and on. I mean it's thus far they haven't been rebuffed, and they are surrounding Baghdad, and so while they conquer each of these large cities, the Iraqi military is simply abandoning their weapons. And it's happening over and over and over again. So that now the Islamic State of Iraq and Syria, its only issue is, can they get enough militants to deploy the weapons that have been given to them? So it's just a whole series of miscalculations, stupidity on the part of the United States that has created this mess. And there is no way to resolve it. You know, America is now talking about bombing, but how are you going to bomb Mosul? How are you going to bomb Fallujah? How are you going to bomb Karbala? The Sunni militants who are there are part of the civilian community, part of the fabric of those cities. Are you going to bomb them completely into glass? You know, are you willing to kill 500,000 people? I mean, what do you do? You can't target the caravans of troops because you don't know who's running the vehicles. There's not a sign on them that says, I'm a Sunni, I'm a Shia. They're all American weapons. We'll be back in a moment. Iraq's most senior Shiite cleric, this would be the Grand Ayatollah al-Sistani, who is not really an Iraqi cleric. Again, this is a story now from Reuters, where the Reuters journalist is unwilling or incapable of doing a bit of investigation, and he would realize that Iraq's senior Shiite cleric is an Iranian cleric, the Grand Ayatollah al-Sistani. He has now ordered Muslims to take up weapons against the Sunni fundamentalists. In a rare intervention at prayers on Fridays, and it is rare that the Grand Ayatollah will actually speak through the microphones at all of the Shiite mosques, but nonetheless, he had them play a recorded message. He says that he is, by the way, the highest religious authority for Shiites in Iraq, even though he is an Iranian. And he has told the, he says, back, here's the words, people who are capable of carrying arms and fighting the terrorists in defense of their country should volunteer to join the security forces to achieve this sacred goal. He then said that any Shiite Muslim who is killing Sunni Muslims will be considered a martyr and will go directly to Allah's paradise. So here he's not distinguishing between men and women. He's not even distinguishing on age. If you are capable of carrying a weapon, then the Grand Ayatollah al-Sistani wants you to pick up a weapon and go off and hunt Sunni Muslims. Men or women, young or old. If you can carry an AK-47, if you can carry a grenade, you are being ordered by the highest religious authority to go off and kill. He said those killed fighting the Islamic State of Syria and Iraq would be martyrs. He said, as worshippers chanted in acknowledgement, "Yes, we are morons. We agree, we are morons. Fight, kill, die. Fight, kill, die." Indeed. Imagine. You know, it's very similar, though, to what the Catholic Church told the Crusaders. All those of you who die, you're going to go directly to paradise because you're fighting for God. It, of course, was a lie then. It's a lie now. The only thing that's true about it is that the term martyr is from the Greek martus. It means witness in Greek. And it is true that those Sunnis who are picking up weapons and are killing and dying are witnessing as to the violent and brutal nature of the Islamic religion. In the spreading chaos, the Iraqi Kurdish forces have seized control of Kirkuk as a town, although it is going back and forth between ISIS and the Kurds. Sediyah and Jalaya fell to the Sunni Muslims over the weekend. The Iraqi army fired artillery shells at the cities as they were fleeing. Imagine that. American artillery now being used to bomb civilian communities. When talked about the problem, Obama said, "I don't rule anything out because we have a stake in making sure these jihadists are not getting a permanent foothold in either Iraq or Syria." And yet, it is the weapons that we provided to them in Syria that are being deployed in Iraq. This president doesn't like the term ISIS. He likes ISIL, even though ISIL is not an acronym. They're not calling themselves the Islamic State in Iraq and the Levant. They're calling themselves the Islamic State in Iraq and Syria. So, but nonetheless, the president seems to like ISIL better than ISIS, even though it's an inaccurate term. The ISIS troops today captured three more cities, all surrounding Baghdad, and they are executing anyone who is unwilling to surrender to their view of Allah and Islam. We will return to this story when Shattering Myths continues after the break. The Reuters article on the disaster that has become Syria and Iraq reads, "As with the concurrent war in Syria, the conflict in Iraq cuts across global alliances. The United States and Western and Gulf Arab allies back the Mani Sunni result against the Iranian-backed Syrian President Assad, but have had to watch as the Islamic State in Syria and Iraq and other Islamists have come to dominate large parts of Syria." That's pretty remarkable. So here we are on opposite sides on a non-existent border. There really is no border now between Iraq and Syria on one side and Iraq and Iran on the other. And on one side of the divide, America and Western allies are supplying all manner of very sophisticated weapons, billions of dollars of weapons, to al-Nusra and to the Islamic State of Iraq and Syria, ISIS, to fight the Iranian-backed government in Syria. And on the other side of a non-existent border today, we're providing $25 billion worth of weapons to the Iranian-controlled government in Iraq to fight the Sunni Mujahideen that we're arming in Syria. And we wonder why it's not working. Let's go ahead and play the intended clip from the last hour. Then we have Glenn on the line, and we'll get his input on this. Go ahead, Aaron, please.
This is ISIS, the Islamic State of Iraq and Syria, driving toward Baghdad. This video, posted on YouTube, purports to show militant fighters in captured American Humvees firing their guns in celebration. Another video posted online shows ISIS fighters parading hundreds of prisoners before a crowd. The captured men, now in civilian clothes, said to be members of the Iraqi police. And in this video, an ISIS fighter speaks to a large and vocal crowd of supporters in Mosul. The fighter, his face covered, tells the crowd his group will establish a state that will protect the rights of Sunni Muslims. Over the past year, the militant group has gained control of dozens of cities in northeastern Syria, and now, according to some experts, nearly half of Iraq.
Not only it controls 50% of Iraqi territories, it controls also large chunks of territories in Syria. And what they're trying to do is to really have a contiguity between Iraq and Syria in order to do what? In order to establish what they call a caliphate, or a centralized state governed by Islamic law.
But this is a jihadist group so extreme, even Al-Qaeda wants nothing to do with them.
We're in a pretty scary place if Al-Qaeda is disavowing people for their violence.
As these graphic photos show, in recent months, the group has executed enemies in Syria and then staged their deaths to look like crucifixions. And ISIS is apparently looking to the future, openly recruiting young boys and running schools to radicalize Syria's next generation. In ISIS territory, women have to wear full black veils in public. Here, ISIS troops burn cartons of cigarettes, part of a ban on smoking. Being accused of theft is enough to lose a hand. And for those who refuse to obey ISIS rules, the consequences are clear. Torture, then death. Jonathan Mann, CNN.
Lovely. And America is responsible. I know Tony Blair doesn't want to acknowledge it. I know that Obama doesn't want to accept responsibility. I know that George Bush is claiming that he did the right thing. But the fact is, when America invaded Iraq, this was the absolute guaranteed fulfillment of that mistake. And it's not just that tens of thousands and later hundreds of thousands and even millions of people are going to die as a result of those miscalculations. But they're never going to be satisfied with murdering Iraqis and Syrians en masse. Ultimately, the caliphate exists to destroy any part of the world that hasn't surrendered to Islam. It will be just as they're screaming, Allahu Akbar, you either surrender to us or we torture and kill you. They will be saying the same thing in Israel. They will be saying the same thing in the United States. This is the fate that we have brought on ourselves. We have no one to blame other than ourselves. We made this mess. Hello, Glenn. It's a pretty sobering audio clip. Allahu Akbar. Either surrender or we kill you. Oh, let me bring you up live. That was my fault. I didn't click your audio button so that you would be live. It's remedied now.
Oh, okay. Oh, very good. It's a where's the Taliban when need them? I miss them. they were so much more benevolent. They stopped the state in beheading in Afghanistan.
The Taliban is actually composed compared to ISIS.
Yeah. Yes. That's what I'm saying.
ISIS is giving Islamic terrorism a bad name.
Yeah, exactly. It sounds like Mosul has been thoroughly isolated.
Yes, isolated, yes.
Isolated. And Iran is between Iraq and a hard place.
Well, the second one is Iran's is right now in quite the difficult situation. I mean, they have completely controlled Iraq, thanks to the United States, and Syria and Lebanon, and now they have a genuine threat. The Sunnis are trying to take control of that country. They have taken control over large swaths of it. The last thing Iran wants is a Sunni-controlled Iraq at its borders. So,
there are those who would like to see Iran's Quds and Revolutionary Guard forces depleted by military action. You know,
yes.
One has to wonder if maybe some of this isn't being allowed because, you know, Hegelian dialectics sitting one side against the other let them, you know, wear each other out. When those forces encroached on Mosul and then later on Baghdad, they traveled cross-country in great, huge, long convoys with, like, neon signs that said, bomb here, you know. I believe in the Kuwait-Iraq war, there was a huge convoy massacre, I believe. It was the first one in the early 90s.
Yes.
And, if the U.S. was going to do anything, that was the moment of opportunity to go ahead and wax that convoy. But, you know,
difficulty really is that there isn't this this sense of isolated wasteland where you were driving from Mosul to Baghdad, because what ISIS did is that rather than attack Baghdad forthwith after taking the second largest city, what they did is they not only reasserted their and reinforced their control over each of the cities that they had thus far taken, but they went and they surrounded Baghdad. They've now taken every city around Baghdad. So they systematically went into over the weekend into the cities they had not yet conquered. So their convoys, if you will, are in city streets. They have the only way to bomb them is to kill now tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, of civilians.
And this is why I can see why the West is hesitant to become involved, because, well, granted, we've created the problems. Yes, absolutely granted. However, those guys in uniform did have weapons, and they vastly outnumbered the invading force. And they all, what were they thinking when they took off their uniforms and took their weapons? Did they really expect mercy from these guys? Because now they're all being, you know, imprisoned and beheaded. It's like, dude, you had a rifle in your hand.
Correct.
Now you're,
yes.
Now you have no head on your shoulders.
That is correct. You can see the videos online of thousands of soldiers and policemen being killed with the ISIS contingent running around in their vehicles. The thing that's really amazing here is that the quantity of ISIS troops, it's really small. I mean, really tiny. You know, it's in the thousands. It'd be a stretch to say that it's in the tens of thousands. It's certainly not in the hundreds of thousands. And yet you've had in the hundreds of thousands of Iraqi military throw off their uniforms and disgorge their weapons.
And now they're about to be put to shame by women, old men, and teenagers. Because, you know, if they take a stand, you know, it's like, hey, you wusses, you know, now we have to fight, you know. So it's just an amazing, what possible motivations that these guys have.
Right. Yeah, and now you want to talk about bombing. Who would you bomb? You know, which side would you drop on one side of the non-existent border in Syria? We're going to be aiding the Sunnis, and then on the other side, we're going to be aiding the Shia. I don't know how you fight a war like that.
I think if people, well, it's certainly a lesser of great evils choice, right? But I mean, I think if most people.
But is there a lesser of two evils here? I mean, truly, you've got in Syria, you've got Hezbollah as the dominant force against the American equipped Sunni Mujahideen. With the Sunni Mujahideen actually being the greater evil in Syria, even though that's the American side. And yet in Iraq, we're pretending that the aggressors are the Sunni Mujahideen that were arming in Syria, and that the lesser of two evils is the Shiite government.
Given the mix, you know, I remember a political cartoon from the 80s that showed, you know, all these different groups and all the soldiers all looking alike and everything. But they, I think that the deciding criterion in this case would have to be the barbarity. If people understood the barbarity of these people, you know, nobody knew this was going on. We're only hearing about it now. If people understood the type of barbarism they were going to, you know, impose, they, you know, would have been easier to justify action against them.
Yes, but these are the same guys that were arming on the other side of the border in Syria, and they are every bit as barbarian in their nature and uncivilized on one side of the border as the other. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. There was an article, an editorial really, posted on CNN where an Iraqi wrote that it is becoming increasingly likely that Iraq has reached a turning point. The forces hostile to the government have grown stronger, better equipped, and are better organized than the army and the police forces in Iraq. And that's amazing. America spent $25 billion training and equipping the Iraqi army, and now a group of Islamic fundamentalists are stronger. They're better equipped. They're better organized than that $25 billion army. $25 billion evidently doesn't buy very much anymore. And so this person opines, you know, so who lost Iraq? And he goes back to saying that it was lost by George Bush, because of George Bush's moronic invasion. And that he also suggests that it was lost by the locals, going back to Vietnam, saying that, you know, the Vietnam was lost because of the corruption of the Vietnamese government. But, you know, it was a puppet government that America put in place, just as the case was with Iraq. We equipped, we empowered the puppet government that exists in Iraq. And by the way, exactly the same thing's going to happen in Afghanistan. You know, it's just a matter of time, and we're going to watch that government fall as well. And just as we did in Vietnam, but to watch this occur, just as it did in Vietnam, just as it's going to occur in Afghanistan, you would think that somewhere along the way, America would say, you know, we ought not do that. This plan of invading countries and putting up puppet governments and sacrificing American lives in the process isn't working. We're not good at it. And every time we try it, we fail. We ought not do that anymore. And yet, look what we did in Iraq and Afghanistan, with this being the only possible conclusion of all of that. You know, are you going to blame the puppet governments that we installed? Who's to blame? Do you think, Glenn?
It's not even so much as being able to place the blame at this point as what will the consequences be. And you know, this huge mess. And with all this factionalizing and fragmentation and doctrinal splits and political splits, mm-hmm. just going to turn, you know, they're going to have this whole region of the world is going to be this mass of embittered, indoctrinated humanity who've all lost loved ones and are just, you know, out for some vengeance themselves. And then I would imagine at some point they will come together against the common enemy.
Yeah, you know, when you're looking at it too, when you recognize that it's the invasion of Iraq that gave Iraq to Iran that created the proxy war that is taking place in Syria, and that the West responded to that proxy war by arming the Sunni Mujahideen that moved across the border with those weapons to take down the Iraqi government. And you realize that we don't have anybody in America that seems to understand cause and consequence. They were unable to recognize that Petraeus's weaponizing of the Sunnis in Iraq while building an army for the Shiites wasn't going to turn out well. That was a disaster in the making, and they went across the border, and the Sunnis began to fight the Assad government. We thought it was great. We gave them more weapons, and then they turned around and used those weapons when they had enough of them in Iraq.
Did you hear the news story where it talked about the Chinese putting people to death, through capital punishment and rulings from their courts? And it was in the news blurbs earlier, news reports earlier, and several of the people that the Chinese just committed to capital punishment were Islamic separatists who staged a bombing at the Tiananmen Gate or something like that. So
yes.
So we have the atheists, communists, saying, okay, we're going to nip this in the bud and kill these Islamic separatists, and let that be a lesson to the rest of you.
But as we know, though, there is no way to prevail here. Well, I would agree with the Chinese that those who were merciless, acting as terrorists in Tiananmen Square and perpetrating Islamic terrorism in China, ought to be put to death for their actions. When you kill a religious zealot, you just manufacture more of them.